broadcasting from the Slumberland Furniture Studio.
Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 44. Southwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, a few flurries possible at times, lows level off around 13. Daytime highs approaching 17. Tomorrow, mainly sunny skies. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
It is 12:35 in Beaver Dam. You are listening to Community Comment. Here's our host, Kevin Haugen.
Well, thank you very much, and good afternoon. Welcome into today's Community Comment. Again, I'm your host, Kevin Haugen. It is my pleasure to welcome into our Daily Dodge TV studio our guest here on Community Comment this afternoon. Joining us here in our conversation today is State Representative Mark Bourne. And I thought I looked at this before we got on today, and I have now completely spaced. Is it now the 39th Assembly, or is it now the 37th Assembly?
37th. No.
Okay, I couldn't. I totally spaced on what the changes were, and we'll talk a little bit about kind of how the new structure of the legislature is here now in a couple of minutes. But Mark, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, good to be here as always, and representing now the 37th Assembly District, and the 39th is in the distant past, I guess, of like 8 or 9 days ago when the new session started. But yeah,
that's fantastic. Now, obviously, it's been just about a month. We've gone over the Christmas break. The inauguration happened. Yeah, we'll talk about that as well in just a couple of minutes. But first, how was the holidays around the Bourne House? How did that go?
Yeah, great. It was we got a nice little break, kind of reset, and preparing to finish up my representative of the 39th district and then move into this session for the 37th, and some quality time with family. So very good, and ready to hit the ground running now.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy couple of months in the legislature. It's already been not super busy, but already had seen some actions taking place on a few things. Again, we'll highlight those here throughout the program this afternoon. But if you have a question for our guest on Community Comment today, be sure to call in at 885-4446, or you can text 887-9595. Again, the phone numbers for the program today to call in is 885-4446, or you can text 887-9595 if you have a question for our guest here on Community Comment today, State Representative Mark Bourne joining us here this afternoon on Community Comment. But Mark mentioned a couple of things that we want to hit on here on our program today. Up first, obviously, in the close rearview mirror here is the inauguration, which took place on January 6th. All the new committee members were assigned, and people come in, the newly elected, everybody took their oath of office, were seated, and just how'd that process go, and how long have, and also I want to ask just kind of your experience in the legislature. Obviously, you've been elected there, I think now over 10 years is the window now you've been. But just how did the January 6th inauguration process go? And then we'll dive into a bit of your history there in the legislature.
Yeah, just wrapped up my sixth term, so 12 years. And so starting the seventh term here on January 6th. And, certainly, it's been an incredible honor to represent the communities I grew up in. And so that's part of why, I reapplied for 2 years, certainly to continue that. The inauguration day is, the start of the session, of course, and it's got, some of the required things of, oath of office and things like that are certainly special and get things started. But I think one of the neat things about it, and for folks that haven't had an opportunity to see it, is, or at least one of the things that I appreciate is kind of a fan of history, is some of the historical things that come with that. There is a book that everyone signs, all of the legislators sign. It's been signed by every state assembly rep since 1877. It's 1870 something. So not quite from the start of the state, but going back to within a couple of decades of the start of the state of Wisconsin. It was announced that it's a little over 5,000 folks now that have been state assembly reps in Wisconsin since the state was created back in 1848. So I kind of enjoy some of that history and being part of that. And it's always announced that the Historical Society is always there with the Henry Dodge Bible that was, and he was, of course, the first governor of Wisconsin and an initial leader in the territory. And so there's a lot of little things like that that are kind of cool to hear about, to learn about, to experience, to be part of. And so it's nice to have our families there and things to enjoy that. It's certainly it's a special day for all of us, but especially for the newly elected folks. You know, my first time 12 years ago, I had a lot of family and friends there and stuff. And so to see that for the new folks coming in and you know, having large groups and big groups of photos afterwards and photos with little kids, you know, and, you know, I think about taking some of those photos 12 years ago with my then 2-year-old daughter, you know, and stuff like that. And certainly a special day and certainly an important day of getting things organized, like you said, you know, the committee assignments and the structures and the rules and the calendar for the next 2 years are all things that are approved by mostly consensus. This year there was a little bit of negativity from the other side of the aisle on some of the calendar things and stuff, which was different. I don't know if that's a sign of things to come, and I hope not, but mostly fairly smoothly getting the structure and things set up so that we're ready to go here and already active here with having our first floor period a week later.
Yeah, and maybe if you don't mind too, for somebody who, like myself, who I don't know if I'll ever end up going this route and being a politician on the state level like you have, Mark, or our other people here in the district. But just what is that first day like for now, for either just a new person coming on board or for you who's, you know, been now for six sessions there in the legislature? Is it kind of remind you like the first day of school back in the day, you know, you come in, you meet all the new classmates, sort of a thing? Or, and then what, obviously you say you take the oath of office, you sign the, you sign the book, but what are some of the steps that are involved in that first day to get the ball rolling for this next session?
Yeah, the first day is kind of a long day, to be honest, because there's so much that gets packed into it on the ceremonial side. But also then on the official side, like things that actually have to occur, that, you know, the signing of things in the oath of office so that you are officially taking the position. And so it's, some of it's kind of ceremonial and some of it's actual things that have to happen for you to have the position to represent your district in the state assembly. And it's because there is so much to it, and it's such a busy day in the Capitol with, it's a ticketed event because a lot of people want to come and support their their friends and family that worked hard to get elected and things like that. So there is it's a huge organized event where, like, our sergeant staff works really hard to make sure that people get where they need to get and are seated for the event. And there's a lot of procedural things that go into that. And then the ceremony itself takes a little over 2 hours because we're sworn in usually by one of the Supreme Court justices. This time it was Justice Bradley, and in mass. But then each person is called individually to go up and sign that historic book. And so there's 99 members, and so that takes quite a while. And I'm sure for the folks at the end of the alphabet, they're thinking they're waiting forever. Me being near the front, I was like the 12th person to do it. So you're sitting there at some point thinking, well, is this going to end? You know, is it? But it's all part of the process, and there's a lot of photos and things taken, and then we elect a speaker and the speaker pro tem. And then we also elect the assembly clerk and the assembly sergeant at arms, which are kind of our lead support staff folks that help run the assembly. And those are all elected by the full body. So there's folks that are nominated. And the only contested was a speaker. Speaker Voss was reelected, but the Democrats did nominate their minority leader against him. And then, you know, it shook out in a partisan vote as expected. But the other three positions were supported unanimously by the body, and then all four of them are sworn into their specific positions that they were just elected to. Usually there's some speeches, especially from the speaker. But then as the ceremony wraps up, the rules of the body are suspended that day. Normally there's not photos allowed on the floor and in the galleries and things like that, but we allow the use of the phones and photos and things. And so you can bring your family down right onto the floor, take pictures with the book or in, you know, with some of the, you know, beautiful, whether it be decorative things that are in the chambers, or I know we, the parlor that's right off the chambers has a really nice like fireplace mantle and stuff. I know we took some family pictures and when we were doing that a few years ago there. And so it's really a big day for both the legislators and their families. And usually then it's followed by some receptions and stuff afterwards. And it's kind of the one day of not a really work day. It's the process of taking the office and then a lot of the ceremony and celebration and family time and things that go around with that. So it's usually a good day. It's usually a long day. the next day we're starting to organize our committee schedules and get to work.
Yeah, and sure, one additional new change, something different this year than years in past, there's the numbers in front of your name on those nameplates. You know, yep. For a long time, it used to read District 39. Now it reads District 37, Assemblyman Mark Bourne. And that's not just your district alone. That is across the entire state, as a lot of the maps were redrawn. Was that last year, 2 years ago, did that process take place?
Last year
that took place and was ratified by the governor before, this past November election. But just how, I know it's still early on in this process. Sure. Just, you know, barely 2 weeks coming up here there and after inauguration day. But just how has that, as you've seen that being kind of a veteran there at the legislature, how has that impacted the whole legislature after these maps have been redrawn?
Yeah, it certainly brought some changes, and some of them on the most basic sense is just a lot of new faces. You know, the numbers have changed a little bit in the caucus. We have fewer members in the Republican Assembly caucus than we had last time. And so obviously the Dems have more to get us to 99 Assembly reps. And so especially on the Dem side, there are a lot of new faces. It's definitely going to take some time to learn some names and things. I forget the exact number. We have 8 new in our caucus of 54 Assembly Republicans. And there are 45, I guess that would be then, Dem side. I think like 2/3 of them are new. I don't remember the exact number, but so it's a lot of new faces, a lot of people getting used to not just finding their way around the building, but the rules of how the assembly functions. We had our first, you know, a session day of actual business here this week. And so a lot to learn, a lot of, you know, from just new names to the process for all those new folks and things like that. The difference in the numbers, you know, I guess the time will tell if that changes the way things operate. I think we're still trying to figure out if there are members of that new caucus that are willing to work with us or not. It's been much like Washington, D.C. It's been getting more hyper-partisan in the time that I've been there. It was better when I started, and as the years go by, it seems like there are fewer members on the other side of the aisle that are willing to work with us or even talk to us at times. And we just don't know yet if that's going to be the case or not. And I think right now there's a lot of maybe lip service to, things can or should be more partisan, but we'll kind of see here over the next couple of months when the rubber meets the road if people are really going to work in that direction or not.
Do you feel like, obviously, you know, when you talk about politics, even on a local level, state level like this here in the state of Wisconsin, you mentioned it, it's partisan debate is gone up here in the last couple of years. Is that you point to just an issue because a lot of the stuff that's being debated and brought up now are looked at as partisan issues, or is it just one side, both sides not wanting to cross over that line because of how, you know, political parties are viewing out nowadays with constituents? You know, they voted along party lines. They expect you to vote along how you want them to vote in the legislature. What do you point to as being this sticking point as people not wanting to cross over that line?
It's a few things, but I think the largest part of it is the electorate. The folks that we're representing is getting more split, more further apart. And so then our bases are pulling us in those directions. And you see it in the primaries. And that's part of why there are fewer folks to work with on the other side of the aisle, because the Democrats have primaried them and taken them out, and they're not there anymore. That, you know, some of the folks in my first couple terms that were more moderate and willing to talk and work with us, vanished in primary losses, and that's their electorate, you know, pushing the membership of the legislature in this example in that direction. And I think we see some of that in our primaries too. And you know, we're a representative body, and so we're kind of reflecting what's happening in our communities or with our voter base. And I think that's the primary thing. And it happened first at the federal level, and then it slowly filters down into the states, and now you're starting to see more of it into like school board races and things like that. It keeps filtering down, and then there's a lot to be debated about why it happens. There's a lot to be debated about if it's good or bad. I mean, there are some, like with anything, there are some positive things with it and some negative things. And but whatever it is, it's what's reflective of our political system right now.
Yeah, and maybe just one additional follow-up question. As somebody who, again, has spent a lot of their lifetime serving, you know, not even just on the state level. You've been a common council member here in the city of Beaver Dam for a bit of time before making that leap to the state legislature. But just as somebody who has that experience and that knowledge coming from, where do you see this moving forward? Is there a way to revert back to where things were 10, 15 years ago? Is there a way, I don't know if righting the ship is the correct terminology here, but finding a way to find more balance for both parties to work coincide with each other and find more common ground that we've seen in recent years?
I don't know if I would say that there's a way as much as that's what will happen.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily like we have to find something or that there's something out there that we have to seek. It's just the pendulum swings, things change, opinions change, communities change, folks pass away and new folks come in to replace them in positions or whatever. I mean, there's a whole variety of things that make it so that the process is always changing and modifying in some way. And it doesn't change anywhere near as fast as like the weather does here in Wisconsin or anything like that. But it always swings in different ways, and sometimes when folks least expect it. And so, you know, I don't think it's an imperfect system now. It was an imperfect system in other ways when I started. It was an imperfect system before you and I were even born. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always been different flaws in a representative democracy, but it's still the best form of government out there, and between you know, our constitutional rights and the way it's set up both at a federal and state level, we're better off than almost every other country in the world, and so we'll work through our hiccups.
With State Representative Mark Bourne here on Community Comment. Again, the phone numbers, if you have a question for our guest today, 885-4446, or you can text 887-9595. If you, again, have a question for State Representative Mark Bourne during Community Comment this afternoon, I want to start getting into talking about really the most recent news that has come out of the legislature, and that is the voter ID constitutional amendment. We're coming up to our break, so I'll say that for when we come out of our break here in our second segment of Community Comment today to make sure we don't interrupt that conversation. But before we get to that break here today, want to give you an opportunity to highlight some other legislative bills that have been circulating in Madison, anything that stood out to you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I know, and again, we'll talk about this in our second segment, the budget's going to be taking up a large part of your time here in the next couple of months. But just what are some other legislative bills that you are talking about in Madison lately?
I think there's a few things that have, you know, as we just started out here, I mean, we are a week and a half really into the session. A week ago Monday it started. The biggest thing being focused on right now, and I mentioned this a little bit when I was on in December too, is tax cuts, tax reform, because that's the one thing that didn't get accomplished last session. The governor really vetoed everything we sent him on this. We sent him a wide variety, and so right now we've got some folks working on a tax package that I think, if it's not out next week, it'll be out the following week, but hopefully next week we'll bring forward the legislation. That's our first crack at trying to accomplish that this session, which we were unable to do last session. I think it's going to focus on, probably with no surprise again, as we've talked about this a few times before, last session we tried to cut taxes for retirees. That was one of our focuses. And so I'm confident that part of the package will do that again. trying to help folks in that are, you know, in those fixed incomes, trying to stay in their homes, that sort of stuff. I think we're also going to try to find some middle class tax cuts across the board for you know, having an impact with families. There might be some other things that we look at on a smaller scale for families, you know, trying to help with the cost of raising a kid. I know that's something that you're working on right now.
And yes, it is.
My wife and I are getting closer to the end of that process. But there's a lot of folks out there right now that are seeing the costs, whether it be of childcare or just, you know, diapers and things like that. And so we did a little bit on that last session with some of the credits, but always looking at stuff like that, maybe things for adoption to make sure that families that want to provide good homes for kids can do that. So it'll be a few things, but primarily it will be focused, I think, on retirees and the middle class, and there might be a few other, you know, those at least smaller, maybe not to the folks that they affect, but as far as like the price tag and the number of people they impact, smaller things around the edges.
Yeah, with the when it comes to effort to get a tax cut ultimately signed by the governor, is it and from what I recall, the last session, it seemed like that would come up every couple months, and then it would there would be some sort of contention that the governor didn't agree on, or the GOP yep. side who put together the tax cut couldn't come to terms with either. Is this something that in this moving forward here in this next session, is this something that you can have multiple stabs at, like send something up, the governor comes back with a change, and then it comes mm-hmm. back down, and just the back and forth tug of war process. Is there as many kicks as the can as you can get it at to get a tax cut passed? Is that kind of how that process unfolds?
Yeah, it could go a variety of ways, but we're certainly willing to put forward a bunch of ideas, or if the governor is willing to talk more right off the bat, I think that would be, you know, more effective. But whatever it takes to bring them to the table. You know, we're going to have some caucus discussions as we start working on the budget process. I'm going to be one that's going to be certainly supportive of, you know, making the message clear to the governor that we need tax reform before we start building this next budget, because we need to know that we have that as part of what makes our state budget great. We will invest in our priorities again like we did last time, but tax reform is part of that. It's not just about spending. And so that needs to be part of the focus. And so we're hopeful that here in the next few months, he's going to be serious about that. We might have a better indication of that here in next week when he gives his State of the State address, or the next month when he unveils his budget. But I don't have high hopes for that, because his budgets in the past have been massive tax increases instead of tax cuts. And so we need to get serious about tax reform.
With State Representative Mark Bourne here on Community Comment today. We do have to take a very short break. More Community Comment is coming up next.
From the Slumberland Furniture Studio, this is 95.3 WBEV Beaver Dam, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Sunshine, blizzards, downpours, even school and community closings. Never get caught off guard with the latest weather conditions and cancellations at DailyDodge.com. Brought to you by Surefire Heating and Air Conditioning.
There's a new show on the block, and it's the first ever live daily program dedicated to the Dodge County sports scene. The Dam Sports Show from 4 to 5 p.m.
Coaches interviews, the top three prep plays of the week segment, and unique angles on the green and gold, Badgers, the crew, and Bucks from Corey Sparks and me, Wally Lukashensky. Tune in to the Dam Sports Show Monday through Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Daily Dodge TV and 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam.
Stop in and load up on great everyday essentials at Fleet Farm Stock Up Sale, January 16th through the 29th. 40-pound bags of Morton Water Softener Salt are just $5.99. Superior Hardwood Fuel Pellets are on sale for $5.49 a bag. And don't forget your backyard friends. 40-pound bags of Black Oil Sunflower Seed are just $14.99. Be sure to stock up on all your everyday favorites, all at the best prices, guaranteed, at Fleet Farm Stock Up Sale.
Don't wait. Continue your orthopedic care today. For years, Dodge County has trusted Marshfield Medical Center Beaver Dam Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Now's the time to see why. We've expanded services, making it easier for you to get the care you need when you need it. Diagnosis, treatment, recovery. We're here for you. Marshfield Medical Center Beaver Dam Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Request your appointment at ortho.marshfieldclinic.org.
This is Matt Heyer from Heyer Insurance. We know the things that matter the most to you are worth keeping safe. Every day we protect things like our cars, our homes, through insurance. But are we protecting our loved ones? Having the peace of mind knowing your family will be financially secure is worth the time to talk about life insurance. Call us at Heyer Insurance, where we can lay out the best options to make sure our family is protected in uncertain times. And remember, when you want to retire, call Heyer.
It's a citrus celebration at Fox Brothers Piggly Wiggly in Beaver Dam and Mayville. Find your favorite citrus fruits on sale this week. Blood oranges, Mineola Tangelos, Caracara navel oranges, and red grapefruit, just 99 cents each. Don't forget Florida's natural orange juice for only $1.99 when you redeem 3,000 pick points. Grab Prairie Fresh whole boneless pork loin for $1.99 a pound. Craving crispy bacon? Farmland bacon is just $3.99. Cheese lovers are in luck with crispy Crystal Farms chunk or shredded cheese, only 99 cents with 2,000 pig points. Food Club soup and pasta, buy one, get one free. Plus Kellogg's cereal is 2 for $5 with multiples of 2. And 12 packs of 7-Up, RC Cola, or A&W Root Beer are 3 for $15 with multiples of 3. Shop Fox Brothers Piggly Wiggly in Beaver Dam and Mayville. Online at foxbrospigglywiggly.com.
Piggly Wiggly, shop the pig!
Estate planning and elder law can seem complicated. Anyone with children should listen as Rob Melick of Melick Law offers easy to understand and easy to implement information and help. Listen the third Monday of each month as Rob discusses the importance of trust-based planning and affordable wills to protect your family. He even offers payment plans. Listen this Monday at 11:10 on your hometown station, 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge.
And that was my mindset all year. Involve Giannis every single day.
Gruber Law Offices presents Thanalysis.
They've never been another person like me.
A podcast from Thanasis Antetokounmpo.
So why would I try to change?
Also supported by Carbless, premium ready-to-drink cocktails.
I just got to involve Giannis.
And Pottawatomie Casino Hotel in Milwaukee.
There's never been another Giannis throughout the history of the game.
Subscribe on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.
Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 44. Southwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, a few flurries possible at times, lows level off around 13. Daytime highs approaching 17. Tomorrow, mainly sunny skies. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge. Right now, 45.
It is 102 in Beaver Dam. You are listening to Community Comment. Here's our host, Kevin Haugen.
Thank you very much, and welcome back into today's Community Comment. Our guest joining us here this afternoon on the program is State Representative Mark Bourne. If you have a question for our guest here on the program this afternoon, you can call in 885-4446 or text 887-9595. I was told by our producer, Wally, during the break that we do have a caller waiting on line one, so let's head to the phones and say welcome to Community Comment.
Yes. Hello?
Yep, you're on the air.
Okay. I'm calling about the Highway 151 between Waupun and Beaver Dam. It's the most ugliest road in the whole state, I do believe. It's where it's all blowed up. It's just blacktop thrown on top of it. It's just one bump after another. I can sit at an intersection and watch cars or light trucks go by, and they hit this bump, and the wheels are off the road. And the state is supposedly have this surplus of money. Can't we get something done here?
Well, we can definitely have the Department of Transportation take a look at what the specific issues are there. I'm trying to think of, as I drive that area quite a bit in the last year, there's some certain sections. I think there was some work done on the railroad in the last couple of years that left maybe that section not replaced quite as well as it could have been. But we can certainly have them take a look at it. Those things are all rated. They're constantly looked at. We can also see it might already be something that's on. They have several different multi-year plans that go out. So maybe it's already something that's scheduled for some work, but we can definitely take a look at it. I don't think I've had anyone ask specifically about that section of road.
Well, yeah, I've called the state before, and it's out in 27 or something. That's two more years. Thing.
Okay.
You go down the road with a load of corn or something like that, you just lose the front end. It's terrible. Dodge County don't know how to fix a road, plain and simple. You leave Dodge County north of Waupun, it's just as smooth. There's breakups there. They're cemented over very nice and everything. It's just great. But this end in here between Waupun and Beaver Dam is worse than a cow lane.
All right. Well, we'll ask DOT to have the county take a second look at if there's some things that maybe need some temporary repair before the if it is 27, which if that's what they told you it probably is, then see if there's some things that can be touched up between now and then.
Well, if they, you know, some of them, are, especially this end between County B and A, in that area by that trailer court in there. God Almighty, that's just terrible. You leave the front end there. So, well, state's got that extra money around, so spend it on that. Would
All
you?
Right, we'll take a look at it. We certainly have been investing more in roads, and I think we'll continue to do that. So we'll take a look at it. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you for the phone call. Again, if you have a question for State Representative Mark Bourne here on Community Comment today, you can call 885-4446. And that particular stretch of road that's we mentioned before coming on, that's the state highway. So that's something that at the state level they look at and decide whether or not where that fits in their reconstruction plans, their you know, fixed plans. You know, how are they line that up? They're the ones who decide where that falls into their calendar of getting those things done.
Yes, as far as like the full reconstruction and that sort of stuff. But I will say, as the caller indicated, the state does work and contract with counties to maintain those roads, and as well as to do things like the snow removal and things like that. And so if it's a case where you know, that there was maybe some work that had to be done, like on the railroad, like I mentioned, or if you're, I can think of in the area that he talked about between B and A over the years, there's been times where some utility work has been done to run water and things, as different things have developed in the industrial parks on each side of the road over the years. Those type of projects then would be managed either by the county themselves, or the county would oversee a contractor handling those things. And so that's why you know, I'll have my office check with DOT on that to see if there's some areas that either through some work that was done or maybe just the weather. I mean, it's no secret that the weather here in Wisconsin, if there was some weakened part in the roads and they got some water and freezing and thawing and stuff. And so maybe there are some things that need to be touched up that aren't full reconstruction type stuff. But we can certainly, we'll certainly take a look at that.
And on to the pavement buckling is another common issue. I've seen that even on that stretch of road. Yeah, in the heat during the summer months, that can cause some major issues with those roads as well. So, I'm sure we'll keep a close eye. Maybe that's something I can look into and just kind of maybe put a story together about that timeline of when certain road projects will be done. I can take a look into that as well. But I want to segue here on a community comment today and talk about some recent news that has come out of the state legislature here just last couple days, and that is a constitutional amendment question that will appear on voters' ballots in April. And Mark, I will let you kind of set the stage for us here.
Sure.
Just what will this question be asking, and what is involved with this particular piece of referendum question?
Yeah, so last week the state Senate and earlier this week the state assembly passed what's called the second consideration. And so, of course, to amend the Constitution in Wisconsin, you need the two consecutive legislatures to vote on the proposal before it can go to the voters of Wisconsin to decide if they want to amend the Constitution. So last session we passed this, and now in the last week both houses again passed the same bill. It was Senate Joint Resolution 2 this time that would will send a question to the voters on the April ballot here in Wisconsin, asking them if they wish to amend the Constitution to make sure that voter ID continues to be part of our elections here in Wisconsin. That's the question in the basic sense. And so all that's being proposed here is to say, is the accountability of our elections and something as common sense as voter ID, something we've had for 12 years, I think, in Wisconsin now, is that something that's important enough to make sure that courts can't remove it in the future, that we want to make it a constitutional protection? I certainly think it is. I think the majority of voters will think it is, but we're going to find out in April. Like I said, very common sense thing. We've been doing it in this state for about a dozen years and other states longer than that. It's not a hard process. There are systems in place to make sure that it's not a poll tax or anything like that. If you can't afford to buy the ID, the state will take care of that for you. There are systems in place to help folks that are indefinitely confined and like in nursing homes that may not have an ID or a driver's license anymore. And so it's a system that's really operated very smoothly. It's something that helps bring a little bit of more accountability to our elections, and that's certainly something that's important. And, you know, some people say, well, we already have this, so why do we need to consider this constitutional thing? Well, right now it is state law. But we have seen more and more in the last decade that people are just so happy and want to take everything to court all the time. And we don't want courts legislating from the bench to say, yeah, it's the law now, but we don't think it should be. It's not constitutional for whatever reason. It might be a reason that is sound. It might be one that we think is not sound, but whatever the court rules, it is. And so we think in the legislature that this is worthy of a constitutional protection, and that's why we've passed it in two consecutive houses of the legislature now and sending it to the voters in April to see if the voters agree. I'm hopeful that they will, because I think this is, like I said, a very common sense, simple way. It doesn't bring total accountability or anything like that to elections. There's other things in place. There's other laws. There's other, you know, work that clerks do and stuff to help ensure the integrity of our elections. But this one seems like a pretty simple, small one that we can, you know, lock into the state constitution and say that this will be something that is part of our elections in Wisconsin.
So as I understand it, this really won't be changing much the process of that voters mm-hmm. have been used to for, mm-hmm. like, as you mentioned, over a decade mm-hmm. and a half here, that, you know, they already present an ID when they go in to vote. This is just ratifying something that's state law to the Constitution
right.
that will then protect it against any lawsuits that could come out of an election yeah. process moving forward.
Right. And so, you know, that there's a constitutional protection to voter ID here in Wisconsin is really what the question is. And yeah, at this point, nothing would change. It would be the same exceptions, like I mentioned, some of them for confined folks and things like that. All that remains in place. And we're not looking to change any of that. That stuff's all really stuff that's been settled by federal court cases over the years. It's pretty clear about what things you have to do to make sure that these IDs are accessible and you know, money's not a problem and things like that for folks. And so all that remains in place. It's just taking when, and this isn't new, and so we've been doing a little bit more of this recently because the courts have become such activist courts is the main reason. But we did it with victims' rights a few years ago. There was a thing already in the state law that spelled out what the rights of victims were in criminal cases and protections that they had as victims. And we put that in the state constitution three, four, five years ago.
You're
now.
Referring to Marcy's Law? Is
that was the law
that
marketing name of the law. Yeah, that was a national movement and stuff. But that was so it's different in every state. But in Wisconsin, we had those rights already spelled out in state law. And then they got incorporated into the constitution. We've done it with outside money in our elections recently. We've did it most recently to make sure that only legal citizens can vote. That was the one that was passed, I think, in the November election. So there's certain things where, you know, we're just looking at, is this something that is important enough that we should ask the voters if we want to codify this in the Constitution to make sure that it's a protection? And, you know, over the years, there's been, you know, a number of these, and it is getting a little bit more frequent. And I think some of us, you know, I talked a little bit earlier about the enjoyment I find with history. And so we do look at them and kind of pause for a moment of like, okay, is this, we don't want to use this too much. We want to make sure that we're putting things in there or asking the voters to put things in there that really do need that. But over the years, it's been done for things like, you know, protecting the right to hunt and things like that. That was, you know, a long time ago and stuff. So it's been done, and I think it's being done a little bit more than maybe even some of us would like. But it's become that important because these courts have become more activist courts and trying to legislate from the bench. And so rather than running for, you know, state assembly or state senate and trying to change the laws there, or for Congress and trying to change the federal laws through the system that's supposed to be do it, the legislative branch, we've seen more of these courts now that have just decided that they're going to legislate from the bench. And if there's a lot of that going on, I think it's important that the voters, that's how this process works, through starting with their representatives through two consecutive legislators, and then the voters get to decide, you know, what are the things that are most important that we want to make sure that are protected.
Yeah, and I think obviously if this does not get approved, I think we all kind of know the process then. It just mm-hmm. sort of dies after that vote in April. Mm-hmm. But if this does get approved, what does that next those next steps look like to be able to codify this as part of the state constitution? Is it immediately if taken effect? And
yep, the language that will be approved will go right into the state constitution, and then that will be a constitutional protection here in Wisconsin. And there will still be the ability for the legislature to modify exceptions along the way if things change, like with a federal court case or something. Like, 'cause like I said, right now it's very much mirroring what federal law requires and what federal case law requires. And so that's why the language says it will put into the Constitution that voter ID will be part of our election process. But it will still allow for modification to the details as to what exactly is defined as that. And as I said, it's defined now. It has been for about 12 years. It's in state law. We're not proposing any changes to that at this time.
And so, again, that voters will see that constitutional amendment question on their April ballots here in a couple of months away. But before then, people tuning in to happenings at the Capitol in the middle of February, we'll see the governor's State of the State address. That's also when he'll present the budget document, essentially, at that point, which will then be turned over to the Joint Finance Committee, which State Representative Mark Bourne is a joint co-chair of that committee, and essentially will start their budget process. But what is that next couple of months look like? Kind of walk us through what that process will look like for you guys at the Capitol.
Well, first, to clarify, there are two speeches that you kind of combine together there, which is confusing for folks.
So
next week is the State of the State address. So the governor will be in, I think, next Wednesday. To a joint session of the legislature to give his State of the State address. And then on the February 18th that you mentioned will be his budget address. So he gets two speeches within a month's time there. The second one is when he does deliver his budget then to the legislature. And so we will start to hear next week, I think, what he's thinking on that, what that budget document might look like, what are going to be some of his priorities. That's usually how they set it up with the State of the State in the same year as the budget. Mm-hmm. But the one, as you mentioned, that maybe I'm focused on as co-chair of the Joint Committee on Finance is certainly next month's budget address. That's a big day for us in the legislative finance area because the governor will give a speech and then introduce his budget. And that's when the legislative budget process really starts. You know, we're going to take the executive budget that he gives us and immediately after that speech go into the Joint Committee on Finance. We'll come into session and introduce that document. And that's more of a ceremonial thing that night. It's a very short meeting, but that officially starts the legislative process. Then the document is before us now in the legislature. We can start making changes, making amendments, crafting the legislative document. And so between now and then, you know, our offices are working with our staff and our fiscal bureau and stuff to prepare for that, to be ready for that, to, you know, constantly taking a look at what our revenue looks like and things like that. And we'll get an update here in I think about 10 days from our fiscal bureau on what our state financial projections look like. And we meet a lot over the next couple of months with stakeholders and constituents to talk about you know, what's important to them, what are some things that, you know, folks think we need to be working on in Wisconsin, whether it be Highway 151 between Beaver Dam and Waupun or other things. I know my scheduler right now is working to schedule a lot of meetings in the district for me in February and March. That's always part of that process too. And so we'll have some budget listening sessions. I know that you always do a great job of putting those out there on your newscasts and social media, so folks know where they can come and share their ideas with me. So we'll certainly get those to you and other media throughout the district as that gets finalized. But we'll be all around the district. I will be, I guess I should say, listening to folks in the district and in March and February and March, and scheduling other meetings. Like, I always meet with all the school superintendents that serve now the 37th Assembly District, and that brings a couple of new schools districts that I really haven't had Randolph in my area before, and Waupun and Oakfield, and so meeting with some new superintendents there, as well as the old gang of the schools that I've been working with for a while and stuff like that. So it's a busy time, but it's a fun time to me. I enjoy working on this process. I enjoy being able to get out there and talk to folks and find out what other people are thinking and try to gather some good ideas. And I say try because I guess that's what I'm doing to start with, but I always have. You always pick up stuff, and whether it's a meeting with a superintendent or a mayor or a constituent that shows up at a listening session or just calls or emails into the office, or I guess even occasionally somebody calls into this program and we get a new idea for a bill or something that needs to be fixed. And so there's a lot of that opportunity out there, and I think that's maybe the best part of the new session and working on the budget, is it creates kind of this opportunity of it's like this blooming of spring flowers or something. It's not happening yet, obviously, in our outside of here this building, but it's just, there's lots of opportunity there to talk to folks, hear some of the same things but also some new things, and figure out how we can incorporate that into our work over the next 5-6 months in crafting a state budget that really impacts all of Wisconsin and making sure that it's a budget for everyone.
Yeah, is this, you mentioned, Mark, really one of the things that you take a lot of pride and joy in doing, this whole budget process, and I'm sure you look at it as an opportunity to really take the concerns and issues that are brought up here in your district on a local level and take those back into Madison and try to incorporate them in any way possible into crafting that budget. And is that kind of how that process looks like for you? You take those notes down, and then when the Joint Finance Committee meets, it's going just through and throwing out ideas and seeing what lands and what doesn't.
Yep, and that's really what the job's all about. It's what the representative democracy is supposed to be about. And so whether it's crafting a straight budget or separate legislation or helping a constituent work through a problem with a state agency, that's something we've talked about before on the program over the years, and something that a lot of people, I think, don't realize maybe. That's one of the most important parts of the job, I think, because there's times where the bureaucracy just is overwhelming for a business or a family that's trying to accomplish something. And we find that a lot of the times they're not asking for anything that's inappropriate or out of line. It just doesn't fit into the normal system. Like, it's a little bit different. And we just need to get those conversations going away from the person that does it, approves that license or whatever every day and always the same way. We talk to their bosses and say, look, this is kind of in the spirit the same thing. We just got something a little different here. How do we work this out? How do we work through this? Can we tweak this? Can we tweak that? And 9 times out of 10, we can. It just needs to get the discussion going because it doesn't fit that particular normal thing. And it's great to have those conversations with folks and have an opportunity to work on things like that. And you can't fix everything. We don't get to bat 100. But there is a lot of stuff we can do, and as I look back over the years, there's a lot of things that we have accomplished working with people right here in this Dodge County area, mostly now Dodge and Fond du Lac County in the new district. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity for that. So it's easy to be, at least at the start, it's easy to be optimistic because there's nothing but opportunity out there. I'm sure we'll have some bumps in the road along the way and some days where maybe the optimism isn't as high. But right now, looking forward to getting to work.
And just a quick overview of this process. So the governor will give his budget address, as you mentioned, not state of the state address, the budget address in middle of February, February 18th. And it gets on to the, into the hands of the Joint Finance Committee. And essentially, you guys have... The goal is to have a budget in the governor's hands that he is willing to sign, essentially, by the time the new fiscal year starts, and that's July 1st. That's right. The window that you guys sort of operate in.
Right. That's the normal time frame. When we get his budget document, we do, like I said, we go that night and introduce it, and it's officially ours, and we can start working on it. We really do spend about the first 3 or 4 weeks after we get it really analyzing what he's trying to do to make sure we understand what he's asking for or suggesting. So our fiscal bureau staff will spend about a month kind of tearing it all apart and rebuilding it to explain exactly what he's proposing, spending wise, revenue wise, whatever the case, so we can understand it all well. Then we'll spend some time doing on a statewide level kind of what I've been was doing on a local level, where we'll do our, we call it the road show. We do some public hearings around the state, you know, usually at like high schools or university campuses where we can get good size venues, because we usually have several hundred people that show up to offer their thoughts on the state budget process. And so that's another part of the process. We also take online input, you know, for folks that can't spend the whole day waiting in line to talk to us at wherever we happen to arrive on those hearings. They can send in their thoughts, and we work through all that stuff as well. And then usually if we're on schedule, in May and June is when we go into executive session and start voting to craft the budget. Every budget since Governor Evers has been in office, we've worked from base. So that means rather than working off of his budget, we work from what current law is. Some people are critical of that, but you know, the governor has really always introduced budgets that have large tax increases, large spending increases, large growth of government. That's not really how we would prefer to do things. And it's important to remember that when we say we're working from base, it means we're working from current law, what the current budget is. And that already was a compromise budget because the legislature passed it and the governor signed it into law. And so we're still working off of things together that, you know, that we crafted last time around, and we'll build a document off of that, a legislative budget, and then, like you said, the goal usually is to get that done by about July 1 and get the governor to sign it. Of course, a lot of folks know the governor has a very powerful line and a veto pen in Wisconsin, so, you know, even with him signing the budget, he can carve a lot of things out of it and make changes to it with that. So I think that's part of what also leads to the compromise, is if he doesn't like exactly how we did everything, he can usually make some tweaks and stuff too.
And that budget address, or when that budget gets introduced, that'll happen right before our next appearance with State Representative Mark Warren. So hopefully he's not too busy the month of February. I can stop on by, and maybe we'll spend a little bit of time in that program diving into that budget and kind of where the Joint Finance Committee will go from there in February.
Sounds good.
All right. And now we'll just about wrap up our time with our guest here on Community Comment today, State Representative Mark Bourne. Representative, again, thank you so much for stopping by.
Good to be here.
And that will do it for today's Community Comment.
Never miss the latest local prep scoreboard and stop in for the latest 1430 ESPN lunch break with the sports page on DailyDodge.com. Brought to you by Air Care Heating and Air Conditioning.
And that was my mindset all year. Involve Giannis every single day.
Gruber Law Offices presents Thanalysis.
They've never been another person like me.
A podcast from Thanasis Antetokounmpo.
So why would I try to change?
Also supported by Carbliss, premium ready-to-drink cocktails.
I just got to involve Giannis.
And Pottawatomie Casino Hotel in Milwaukee.
There've never been another Giannis throughout the history of the game.
Subscribe on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic